What's going on, everybody? It's Tuesday night, 7 o'clock. You are tuned in to the Stoned On Sports podcast, and we definitely appreciate you doing so. Today, we are continuing our march to the fantasy baseball season. We're going to be moving over to the hot corner and previewing third baseman tonight. Before we jump into that, though, Kyle, there was a football game over the weekend of significant importance.
Yes, there was. The Super Bowl, final game of the season. So a little depressed, no football for several months here, but it's starting to be, you know, when you don't, that phrase where you don't bet against Tom Brady in the playoffs, I think that we can say that about Patrick Mahomes with a certainty for sure. Fine game, pretty boring in the first half, but you know, ended with a overtime finish, pretty awesome. I think Kyle Shanahan botched that coin flip for overtime, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, and I can understand why he took the ball first in overtime, because you go down, you know, you want to believe you're going to score. Chances are Kansas City is going to match you, and when it switches over to sudden death, you want that first possession. At the same time, a big part of analytics that people don't really think about is it's really access of information, in that if you take the ball second, you now know what you need to do. Yes. Whether Kansas City kicks a field goal, they score a touchdown, extra point, 2-point conversion, they don't do shit, whatever it may be. Maybe the dude just isn't a big game coach. Maybe he's somebody who he needs an offensive coordinator there for himself to call plays so he can, I guess, get his mind right in the situational arena.
Yeah. Yeah. Or hire a guy just for that. Still call plays, but needs some help in there. Can't win the big game. So fine in the regular season and can't win the big game. And you knew, like, just the struggles they had against Green Bay and the Lions, that I just really thought Kansas City would win. And Patrick Mahomes, when he got the ball there at the end of overtime, you know, he was running out to the field happy as hell because he knew what he needed and he was going to go down there and get it. Dubo in the chat, thanks, brother, for joining. Did you get any?
What's up, Dubo?
Super Bowl bet wins.
Look at this guy.
Rami, what's up, brother?
No, hey, kidding. Fellas,
happy Galentine's Day. Yeah, day before Valentine's Day.
Appreciate that, dude. Appreciate that. And you know, it's a nice little coincidence. Ramey's here in the chat. Like Caesar returning triumphantly to Rome, Ramey will be back on with us next week. I have an opportunity to go watch my Pistons get their ass beat by the Pacers. So I will not be present next Thursday.
Dubo says KC has better coaching. That's what won the game. Yeah, could be.
Oh, for
sure. And Mahomes and Kelsey. And I won't understand why, you know, CMC was running the ball so well. Even coming out of halftime, they didn't give the ball to him as much as I thought they would. And in that overtime period, they did, and he was doing well. And then the last couple plays, they threw passes, and I didn't understand that. I would have ran the ball at least one of those times.
Yeah, same here. And there was some play calling that was kind of suspect. Brock Purdy played fine. You know, he certainly didn't lose them the game, but, you know, coming in, you always, or at least I was, you know, have mentioned that, you know, I want Brock Purdy throwing the ball as much as possible if I'm the opposing team. At 38 attempts, yeah. And you look at his average down at 6.7 yards, which is well off his regular season number. And, you know, kudos to him, because when you're throwing to Juwan Jennings and Conley, because Debo and Ayuk are covered up, all right, you're doing what you need to do. You're going through your reads. I was really disappointed, though, with just how little George Kittle did. I mean, two grabs for 4 yards off 3 targets. And look, he's a hell of a blocker, and I imagine that he was spending a great deal of his time doing that. But to have a first-team All-Pro type offensive weapon and to not really utilize him in a manner that was more constructive is a little head-scratching as well.
Yeah. Dubo responded to my question. Lost almost every bet. Me too. Me too.
Yeah, I had a couple that hit. I know I was standing firm on under 47 and a half for the game total. That just, you know, barely by the hair on my sack, it came through at 47. And then, you know, again, just to fade the public on Isaiah Pacheco going over his rushing total, I bet the under there, and that came in. Otherwise, not much else that was positive.
Ramey says he's the John Stewart of sports podcasting. I haven't watched that episode. That just last night's episode of the Daily Show. I gotta check that out. And then Ramey says makes a good point. Getting the ball second with the new overtime rules means, you know, it's four down territory down the whole field. So very good point as well, sir. But it's a good game. I think the final figures are came out from Nielsen about the most watched TV program maybe since the moon landing in 69 is what I read. So crazy. Nice.
You know, that was staged though, right?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Jesus. Don't tell me you're one of them flat earthers.
No, I'm a triangular earther.
Right. Still have my fastball. Tops out at 75. Bullshit. but yeah, NFL's over. Off season's gonna be happening. Just the first day for, you know, franchise tenders and transition tender tags, and I can't even talk franchise and transition tags. That starts the 20th, so just in a week. So and as the offseason progresses, we'll be talking a little bit about that, free agency, combine, and from a fantasy perspective, see what happens, because yeah, free agency's in a month from today, so
it's creeping up on us.
It's awesome. But we are here for our third base preview. Fantasy preview. We got our rankings up. Let me toss them up.
Get
right
them
now.
Up on the screen.
Got Jose Ramirez on there. Number one rated third baseman overall, rounding out the top five: Austin Riley, Manny Machado, Devers, and LA De La Cruz. So these are on the website already, stonedonsportspodcast.com.
Yeah, third base is kind of a position in transition, in that you've got some of the older guard and Arenado and Machado who are on the back end of their peak years, and you've also got some younger dudes coming up who you can see the potential and you can see the talent there, but they're just not quite there yet. There are some decent values to be found, and there are some elite options as well. Why don't we get started with the first one in Cleveland Guardians third baseman Jose Ramirez. He was the number, where in the hell did that go? God, I hate this. Here we go. Number two third baseman last year. Right now, he's a number one first baseman off the board. ADP of around 14 or 15. You can get him for around $34. Last year, he put up 543 points, averaged 3.5 points per game. He's one of the truly elite options at the position. He's been a reliable source of power and speed. He's got five straight full seasons, and I'm excluding the abbreviated 2020 season there, with at least 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases. There's also several years of 30 plus in one of those categories sprinkled in. Last year, he had 24 home runs, 28 steals. So he's continued that streak. His run production did take a dip last year just due to team context. There's not really many opportunities with that lineup. There is a team full of just dudes. He finished with 80 runs driven in, scored 87 times. If he had found 20 more RBIs, it would have been three straight 100 RBI seasons and four of the past five full seasons. To date, the team hasn't really made any meaningful signings to help bolster the offense. I think their best help for them right now is if Kyle Manzardo breaks camp with the team. He's their number one prospect. But getting back to Jose, he's an excellent overall hitter with great on-base skills. He had a .282 average last year, got on base at a 35% clip. He's had an on-base percentage actually over 35% six of the last seven full seasons. One thing that was really cool, he had as many strikeouts as walks. He had 73 of each, and he's actually decreased his strikeouts each of the last three seasons. He's also hitting the ball harder. He saw some nice gains in exit velocity, up 2.5 mile an hour to 90 miles an hour, and his hard hit percentage, which was up almost 4.5%. He's also hitting more fly balls. His fly ball rate has increased each of the last four seasons, and it's back close to where it was when he hit 39 home runs in 2018. I think he's going to get back over the 30 home run mark this season with plenty of doubles mixed in and a few triples as well. He had 65 extra base hits last season, and that's just everything but a single. So doubles, triples, and home runs all added together. I think he's going to push that total closer to 80 this season with 180 runs plus RBI. And like I said, back up over the 30 home run mark.
Yeah, for sure. I think the return of Josh, a healthy Josh Naylor, and like you mentioned, Kyle Manzardo, a little bit as a call up this season, he's their top prospect. Looking at the data last year, it looks like teams easily pitched around Ramirez.
Oh, he had no protection in the lineup.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm hoping with Naylor back healthy, and if Manzardo gets called up, he'll have some opportunities. Because yeah, last year there was too many limited offensive, you know, opportunities as well. So his runs plus RBI at just 167 last year. In 21 and 22, he averaged 215. So I look for some improvement there again. With the healthy players batting around him, there's plenty of room for profit. I think if he can get over the 200 mark there as an actual late round first pick, we'll see.
For sure, dude. I mean, overall, he's a good option. And I think everybody who tunes in regularly understands how I feel about Ohio and everything that takes place within that state. Yeah. But at the same time, you have to play fantasy and betting as well. You play that with your head, not your heart,
for sure. Our number three ranked is Manny Machado of the San Diego Padres. ADP is 62, going for $21. I think that's a little high. As more drafts go on, the averages on that, I think it's going to go down a bit. I don't think I wouldn't pay $21 for him.
No.
It's close, 15 to 18 or something like that, but 21 seems just a little too much for me. What do we got there? Ramey says, how has the transition of the game and the position overall impacted the value of third base compared to others?
Right now, third base is kind of a top-heavy position. In years past, it was a position that was very, very deep. But like I brought up at the outset, we've got kind of the old guard who's just hanging on, and we've got the next generation that they're right there on the cusp of taking over some of those top five slots at third base. And right now, it's kind of a mix of both to a degree. And my dumbass did not have the rankings pulled up, so I'll just kind of continue to mindlessly talk here as I get over to our Google Drive and pull up our third base rankings. Austin Riley, he's kind of in that in-between area. He's not necessarily a super young guy. He's not super old. Same thing with Devers. You know, he's been around for a minute, and he puts up consistently good stats. So there's some value to be had later on, but there's definitely a third base dead zone as well. I think kind of in the low teens to maybe the late teens.
Supersonic, what up? I'm in the house.
What's up, loud boy?
But back to Manny Machado. You know, plenty of power. You can see by the 30 home runs and 91 RBIs. He had a good year, but it was really a down year based on still hitting 30 home runs and 90 plus RBIs. OPS was 782. That was his lowest since 2017. And his batting average, that 258 batting average, was his lowest since 19. He did have an elbow injury that plagued him for much of the season. He was the DH towards the end of the season there before undergoing that surgery for that tendon. He's already hitting and playing catch. So we'll see. Now in baseball, there's a lot of times to recovery times for batters throwing and hitting. And it looks like he'd be hitting a lot sooner than throwing. So he could begin the season limited to DH duties again. He is mostly usually durable. He hasn't been on the IL since 2014. So hopefully this is just a one-time thing. Guy still smacks the hell out of the ball. above average exit velo, barrel rate, and hard hit percentage, topping and placing in the top 30% in those categories. I'm just saying, even with the elbow injury, still hitting 30 homers, 90 plus RBIs, how much talent will be around him? Does it matter? I wonder. Being that there really wasn't much talent when, well, of course he was younger, but there really wasn't much talent in Baltimore either. And he still produced there as well. He's definitely a high floor option who bats in the heart of the order. I suppose an MVP type caliber season could happen, but we'll see what happens in San Diego with his teammates.
Yeah, and really there's talent ahead of him in the lineup. When you look at Ha-Seong Kim, you look at Xander Bogaerts and Fernando Tatis Jr. So the opportunity to drive in runs for him is going to be there. I think if he gets back closer to that 150 games played mark, you're going to see him back up right around 100 RBIs, maybe a few more. The real concern is run scoring. Jake Cronenworth had just an absolute ass season last year, and he's going to be counted on to provide Manny Machado some protection in that lineup. If Cronenworth bounces back to the form that we saw in 2021 and 2022, I think you're looking at another 190 runs plus RBI season out of Manny Machado. If Cronenworth doesn't bounce back, I think you're going to see something along the lines of what you saw last year. But just him being on the field more, I think is also going to help, especially there in the counting stats. You have to remember, too, Petco is the second best pitcher's park there is in baseball. So that does suppress some of the power a little bit. You're right, $21 is a little rich. The 62 ADP is a little bit easier to swallow. I don't know if I ended up with him, if I can get him for $17, or if I can get him around the 75th overall pick, I'm a lot happier. I think where he's going, though, I would probably pass.
Agreed. Okay, next up, Gunnar Henderson, one of the young and upcoming guys you mentioned earlier, plays for the Orioles, ADP of 30, $26. That seems about right. There's some rumblings about him also playing shortstop this year as well. We'll see. Played 150 games last season. He started slow when the season began. A lot of big leaguers do wait, and you know, you're waiting for the wet or the warm up a bit, but he hit just 201 through the end of May. But then the rest of the way, 276, 322, 534 slash line. He won the rookie of the year in the AL, earned a silver slugger, and finished eighth in the AL MVP voting. He's a hot and upcoming player. His home ballpark is not very great for hitters as well. But I think he makes up for that by smacking the shit out of the ball. You guys remember the scene from Sandlot where Benny just beats the shit out of the ball and the innards come out of the leather? That's something this guy can do. A 92 exit velo, that's 24th overall in the league. He's in the top 9% of the league, and the hard hit percentage, top 5% of the league. Just like I said, just smashes the shit out of the ball. Weaknesses, kind of not so good with same side pitching. He's a lefty. He's not so great against lefties. Only hit 209 with three homers and a 618 OPS against southpaws. Against righties, hit 272 with the 25 home runs and an 885 OPS. I think sky's the limit for him. Should remain strong while hitting in the middle of that excellent Orioles lineup. He only had 10 steals. I see him get more steals this year. His sprint speed is in the top 15% of the league, and his base running run value is tops in the league. Ugh. He's either the fifth third baseman off the board or the sixth shortstop off the board, currently at 30th overall, roughly. There's other hitters, I guess, out there that are similar stats, profiles that are a bit cheaper. But I like the upside with Henderson on the Orioles team.
Yeah, and you are absolutely right. It's upside there. You're right. He does beat the ball like it owes him money. One thing that was a little concerning is his O swing percentage, and that's just a percentage of pitches outside the strike zone that he swings at. It was up 8.6% year over year. It's still slightly below average for MLB, but it's something worth keeping an eye on. He also strikes out quite a bit, which is not uncommon with these young players. The pop is real. He's going to have plenty of run production opportunity there in that lineup. RBIs, maybe not so much, because I imagine he's going to be in the mix batting leadoff a good amount of time for them. And if he can continue to find those gains in his launch angle, I think he's got a 35 home run bat with him. Maybe not necessarily this season, but here in the not too distant future.
Yeah, you prove your launch angle with how hard you already hit the ball, good things will happen. Good things will happen. All right, next up, Alex Bregman. I guess he can be considered one of the old guys, or maybe not old guys, maybe boring guys, as third baseman goes, but he's solid. He's real solid. Only two guys had more walks than strikeouts last season. One was Juan Soto, who is with the Yankees now. The other was Bregman. Patient hitter. I think he can be real selective, and it really pays off in his padding his fantasy stats by getting on base more, scoring runs, some steals. Not really his game. He only had three last season, but able to knock in runs, get you more points in fantasy. I had him on my team last year. Loved it. I think he's one of the safest floors at any position for that matter, not just third base. Did well to improve on his stats from 2022, improved on all of them. Guy gets on base. He walks frequently, doesn't strike out. He's in the top 4% of the league. He's got 1 year left on his 5-year deal. I expect an extension there to make him an Astro for life. So you're set there for dynasty. I think this season he'll hit 260, 20 homers, 90 RBIs, 90 runs, throwing a few steals. I think it's a great value at where we have him ranked.
Yeah, absolutely. He's one of those dudes that he's not a flashy pick, but he's incredibly consistent and he absolutely destroys left-handed pitching. Yeah. You mentioned earlier that he had more walks and strikeouts. He's actually done that in back-to-back seasons and four times in his career. So the dude completely understands what he is looking at the plate. Him for $15. Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah. Going just inside the top 100 overall. Absolutely. Again, can't stand the Astros, and I'm sure it doesn't take too much thinking as to, you know, to figure out why. But again, this is a game we play with our head and not our heart. Plenty of opportunity for run production. That's a stacked lineup. He's going to have lots of protection in the lineup. He's going to have dudes in front of him who get on base. He's going to be hitting second, probably behind Altuve. Again, you know, Altuve just got him a new deal, so he's going to be there for a minute. And I am always happy to take a guy in a walk year, just like you said, with him. So maybe let's hope that he doesn't get signed, and maybe he finds his way onto my team, and I get that little walk year bump.
Maybe.
That would be pretty damn cool. You know what? We're gonna head to Ramey's favorite place, St. Louis. We're going to talk about Nolan Arenado, and he's one of these, we'll call him an elder statesman at the position. He was a number 14 third baseman last year. Right now he's going as the number 10 third baseman off the board. You can get him right around that 99-100 ADP, and you can pick him up for $15. Scored 420 points last year, how apropos for this show, averaged 2.9 a game. You know you're talking about a fantastic hitter when 26 home runs and 93 RBI is considered a down year. You're not going to get 40 home runs from him again in his age 33 season. His hard hit percentage has been declining and is below his career average. And quite frankly, he's never really been one to hit the ball exceptionally hard to begin with. But he is pulling the ball at a career high rate. So a repeat of the 26 home runs isn't out of the question, but I wouldn't bet on it. I think he's going to end up somewhere in the low 20s. His average was down 30 points last year to 266. His on-base percentage was down 40 points to 315. Looking at his batted ball data, we can see that his ground ball percentage is up by 8%. His fly ball percentage is down by 4%. He also had his lowest walk total since 2015 with 41. I don't think he's going to have a low 300s on base percentage again. As far as the batting average, maybe he can get back up into the 275 range with an on-base percentage of around 330. His strikeout percentage was up 5% year over year, but still well below league average. I think he's going to be able to drive in 90 plus runs again, provided a very young but talented team can get on base at a little bit better clip than he can himself. Should be batting cleanup right between Lars Nootbaar, which is just an awfully fun name to say, and Wilson Contreras. It seems like there's about six dudes named Contreras who are catchers in the league right now. I'm expecting similar overall run production to last season, around 170-ish runs plus RBI, especially if he gets closer to the 150 games played mark, because he's somebody who's played 140-plus games each full season since 2015. And he's just another, we'll call it, boring guy, just like the dude we just talked about, Alex Bregman.
Yeah. You mentioned how he's out there, but that 144 games and his 612 plate appearance are his fewest since 2014. So I think a rebound season is not out of the question for him, but it's risky with his ADP, with a lot of younger names that I like better, even Bregman for that matter. And he does say, you know, he's got plenty of wear and tear in that body and stays healthy. And you wonder if this will be the season, but it's hard to justify passing on some other higher upside players in his general ADP in that vicinity that I like better.
I agree wholeheartedly. And as a matter of fact, the next dude we're going to talk about is one of those people. We are headed down to the defending champions and Josh Jung. He's our number 11 third baseman. Last year, he was the overall 24th first baseman, or I'm sorry, third baseman. Right now, he's the number 12 third baseman off the board. ADP of around 107. You can get him for $12. He had 328 points last season, good for 2.7 points per game. He missed about 6 weeks in August and September. If he doesn't do that, we're talking about a 30 plus home run, 90 plus RBI season instead of the 23 home runs and 70 driven in he had last year, and most likely a higher ADP. I think this is a dude that you're not going to be able to get outside the top 100 players going forward after this year. So, you know, enjoy this value while you can get it. He had typical rookie struggles with a high strikeout percentage and a low walk rate, and he really struggled with breaking balls. Because of that low walk rate that he's got at 5.8%, his on-base percentage is likely to remain in the low 300s. He was at 315 last year. There's going to be some improvement there just because of the kind of prospect pedigree he has and the coaching and just being surrounded by some of the best hitters in the game day in and day out. You would think almost he's going to learn some stuff through osmosis. Still, I'm not really looking for much improvement in his average, if any. He hit 266 last year. Maybe he gets lucky and gets to 270 this season, but I'm not counting on it. I think some regression towards a 260 mark or maybe a little bit lower are more likely. He's somebody that hits the ball harder than most and does so more consistently. And is he's above average. I must have missed something here. in avoiding ground balls. Sorry, my notes are a little fucky at the moment. Doesn't hit the ball on the ground a whole hell of a lot, and he does a good job of putting it in the air. His line drive and fly ball percentage are about 5% over the league average. I think if he plays 150 games this season, you're looking at 32 home runs, 185 runs plus RBI, and I think he'll chip in around 32 doubles as well.
I like him, especially where his ADP is. I think he's solid investment this season. You got that. If that big time power shows up more than it did last season, and he's fully healthy, and that supporting cast all around him with the Rangers, yeah, somebody on my radar for sure. I like him. Next up. I miss my spot here. Mr. Max Muncy of the Los Angeles Dodgers, currently being drafted around pick 167, about $6. It's probably about right. Finished as the number seven short or third baseman last year, averaging 3.3 points per game and an 808 OPS. Pretty good. Only played 135 games, but did have career highs in with the 36 home runs and 105 RBIs. I think he really, really suits fantasy points leagues overall, more than Roto. He scored almost as many runs as he had hits. He had 95 runs versus 102 hits. That's some Kyle Schwarber territory right there. His strikeout rate did improve just a little minor jump from 26.4 to 24.5. Draws a ton of walks, but that low batting average, just 212, it's just not good. It's going to be, probably batting what, fifth, sixth, behind some combination of Betts, Ohtani, Freeman, and Will Smith. Plenty of opportunities to drive in runs. He has that top tier walk rate, which in most points leagues, that's about just as good as a single. But my big problem is he's so shitty against lefties. Will he play all the time? Will he be platooning? Will they just drop him in the order and flip him and like Teoscar Hernandez around? We will see. Some bad stuff. No longer has second base eligibility like he did last season. So that causes a little less value for him because of that. And that 212 batting average, again, his expected batting average was 225. So it's kind of no fluke in my opinion. But if he can get a few more hits and keep up the run production, I don't understand why he can't be a top 100 overall player and top 10 is his position.
Oh, absolutely. And understand, against same side pitching, he's a left-handed batter. Against lefty pitchers, he hit 155. I mean, that's just atrocious. He is great value where he's going, both in terms of ADP at 169 and average auction value, $5. We're talking about a legit power hitter that you're getting in the low teen rounds or close to the 17th round, just depending on how many teams are in your league. This is a dude who's got 30 plus home runs in four or five full seasons, 90 plus RBIs and runs in three of four full seasons. Strikeouts are a problem. Dude draws a walk though. He walks at almost double the league average, which is just ridiculous. He's got a great eye at the plate. He just can't hit same side pitching. With a 155 average against lefties, you're going to have a difficult time leaving him in the lineup. Maybe you pinch hit him later in the game or something like that. But I think he is somebody who may end up getting platooned.
Yeah. Brandon James Cargill in the chat. We meet again.
What's going on, Brandon?
Haven't seen you in a minute. Soup came over for the Super Bowl get together. Ramey's got a good question. With the DH being in both leagues now, does a third base playing DH a couple times a week impact their fantasy value at third base?
Not particularly, no, because it's a trick that you'll see used more often with some of the better hitting catchers, which we'll get into later on this week. You DH them a time or two a week just to keep their bat in the lineup while giving them kind of an off day so they don't have to go out there and play the field all day, especially with some of these dudes who are a little bit long in the tooth. I think you'll see that happen a little bit more often, especially on contending teams in an effort to try and keep some of these more prodigious bats fresh as the season wears on. It's baseball season is so damn long.
It sure is. Okay.
Maybe we should go to Schittsburg next. Key Brian Hayes, young dude with a heck of a lot of potential. He was the number 21 third baseman last year. Right now, he's the number 17 third baseman off the board. You can get him around the 175 mark for ADP or $10. Scored 343 points last year. Good for 2.8 a game. He's not known for being a power hitter. His 15 home runs last season were a career high. But coming into his age 27 season, there's some indicators that maybe some more power is on the way. His exit velocity is in the top 7% in the league. His hard hit rate is up each of the past three seasons. His exit velo is also up each of the past three seasons. He's hitting more fly balls and pulling the ball more year over year, and he's hitting fewer ground balls, which obviously you're not gonna hit a home run on the ground. Now, do I think he is a 30 home run bat? Absolutely not. But he is somebody that makes good contact in the zone. He's patient, but he will chase. His walk rate was down 3% year over year. He only had 28 free passes for the entire season, which is not a lot, obviously. But because he makes good contact, his 271 average was about 30 points higher than league average. But again, he doesn't walk, so that delta between batting average and on-base percentage was low. His on-base percentage was only 315, so obviously not great. I think he's got a sneaky chance at a 2020 season. He had 20 stolen bases in 2022. I think that's well within the range of outcomes, especially if those gains in the batting indicators I just talked about continue. He's going to be hitting third in a not-so-great lineup, but I could envision a scenario where he improves on his 65 runs and 61 RBI from last year, but not by a whole hell of a lot. And one of the big reasons is he has yet to play 140 or more games in a season. If you're not out there, you're not racking up counting stats, you're not jacking the ball out of the park, and you're not stealing bases. But if he stays available and you're looking at somebody who you're drafting, you know, 17th, 18th round, if you can get a 2020 hitter out of that and maybe stick him as a, you know, in your corner infield slot or a util slot, something like that, you could certainly do a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah, I agree. You pretty much took most of what I was going to say. The power stats you were mentioning, the launch angle you didn't talk about. 8-degree improvement over 2022. That's massive. And you mentioned his fly ball rate went up, so that correlates, not hitting a lot on the ground. And I think his glove and his youth will keep him out there. Plenty of playing time. He's a solid, if unexciting, option. But you could do worse.
You certainly could. So we only got a couple more to go here. Let's head on out to Coors Field. We'll talk about Mr. Ryan McMahon. He was the number 19 third baseman last year. This year, he's a number 23rd baseman off the board. He's got a 227 ADP, so he's damn near free. You can pick him up for $3. Yeah, that's pretty damn cheap. And you know, quite frankly, we're not going to talk about $1 players anyway. Scored 365 points last year, 2.4 a game. He's somebody who's been very consistent over the last 4 years. He's played in 140 games or more, had 20 home runs or more, 65 plus RBIs with 2 years in there with 80 or more RBIs. He makes solid, consistent, hard contact, and he plays in an excellent ballpark for hitters, so it should translate to a good amount of extra base hits, which, you know, in points league are worth more. Strikeouts are a concern, though. His strikeout percentage has been on the rise since 2021. It was 31.6% last season. He had 198 total strikeouts, which is a lot. That was a career high. there is some swing and miss with him. And, you know, his contact on pitches in the strike zone is kind of low. It almost seems like he was selling out for home runs last season, but missing. He pulled the ball and hit fly balls at or near a career high rate. He's somebody who will draw a walk, though. He's been around the 60 mark the past 4 seasons. There's a nice mix of potential and some injury-prone vets in front of him. He shouldn't have any issues, though, repeating last year's run production. He had 70 RBIs, scored 80 runs. Any opportunities for gains are going to depend on the health of Chris Bryant and Charlie Blackmon and how well Nolan Jones and Ezekiel Tovar develop. And if you ask Ramey how well Chris Bryant is at staying on the field, I'm sure he could talk for 5 or 10 minutes about that. He's somebody who's going to have third base and second base eligibility. He's a nice bench piece or a a low end middle or corner infielder, but not really much more than that.
No. Most of his production came in like a 50 game stretch there over the summer, where he hit 299, 388, and 540. That's a 928 OPS with 60 combined runs and RBIs and 10 home runs. Before the streak, OPS 675. After that streak, late summer through the end of the season, 672. So that's 50 games of good production and then 100 of shit. So throw in his rising strikeout rate and, you know, the offense, the players that are around him, and he's a player that can contribute at home only. Otherwise, he should be on the fucking wire.
Yeah, and this goes back to something that I talked about when we first started talking about baseball. It's a very long season. Players get hot, players get cold. He's somebody who, if you notice he's starting on a hot streak, get him in your lineup and ride it for as long as it lasts, because the lows are going to be pretty low with him as well.
Yeah. Heck yeah, we got a comment. Ramey says, let me go get my soapbox in reference to the Chris Bryant comment. All right, last one here we got. We got us a free agent, Matt Chapman. Probably one of the bigger bats still around. Him and Bellinger is about it there. He looks pretty pissed off. He's still not signed yet, eh? getting drafted late as fuck. He's worth $3 as well. Played 140 games last year, had 17 homers, 54 RBIs, started strong. In the early season, was only striking out about 22% of the time through May, and then fanned almost 30% May 1st and on. It was bad. Does have a pretty respectable walk rate, 10.7%, but the guy can smash too, evidenced by his 39 doubles he had last season. It was tied for first at the position. He's in the top 2% of exit velo, barrel rate, and hard hit percentage. It's difficult to sell him as a big upside play, a significant upside play. He's slightly better than average hitter who's heavily tied to his glove. He's been a solid to elite defender every year of his career. He's won a few golden gloves as well. I don't know. He's 31. Much of his value is from defense. Back to the Blue Jays seems most likely to me. They did add Justin Turner, who can play some games at third, but he's 39, I believe. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. I thought maybe the Giants, but they just signed Jorge Soler. So I don't know if that is a good bat for them. The Tigers could use a third baseman.
Yeah, absolutely they could. And he's a dude. And we, you know, obviously we talked about this when we were going over first baseman and talking about Cody Bellinger. A lot's going to depend on where he lands, the lineup that he's in, the ballpark that he's playing in, the playing time that he gets. But there's, depending on where he goes, I wouldn't have an issue getting him it essentially for free. But if he signs in an amazing spot, you know, there's going to be some helium with his ADP and his auction value. His home run totals have been declining since he hit a career high 36 in 2019, but you're exactly right. He was a solid source of extra base hits last season with his 39 doubles. If he was playing somewhere like Comerica Park, I would expect a line somewhere similar to that. Maybe he gets a few more home runs just because of the renovations they made there at the Rogers Center, really sapped some of the power from the right-handed hitters there. Whereas, you know, in Detroit, it seems like every few years they're moving the fences in a little bit further just in an attempt to bolster some offense. And, you know, look, Chicks dig the long ball and maybe he can provide a little bit of that. But as far as the average or in that, no. 240 seems about right. Maybe he gets lucky and hits 250. But because of the walks, he'll have a decent on-base percentage. So he's going to be a little bit more valuable in on-base percentage leagues as opposed to average leagues if you're playing roto. But the strikeouts are not great. So in points leagues, at least a lot of them, hey, it's minus half a point for a strikeout.
It is. That can hurt. That can hurt. Let's see. We had I think some little bit of MLB news and notes. Did we not?
Yeah, you touched on it. Just Jorge Soler signing with the Giants, 3 years, $42 million. That's another pitcher's park, so don't expect the same power numbers that he put up last year with Miami this upcoming season with San Francisco. But I still think he's a legit 30 home run bat, but maybe it's going to be, you know, 30 or 31 instead of the high 30s or pushing for 40. Shit, he led the league in home runs a couple of years back. I think he had 49, so don't expect that. He's not super old, and you know, this is a former Cub who is excelling. You know, once he gets out of Chicago, it seems to be a case with a lot of players who go to the Cubs and then they just kind of suck for a while and then they get out of there and it's like, oh shit, freedom. I can play well again.
Yeah, and he has some power, but he's going to strike out a lot.
Oh, for sure.
There's going to be a lot of swing and miss when it comes to him. In his 870 games over 10 seasons, he's had 170 homers and 927 strikeouts.
Ooh, that's a lot. Not amazing.
No, it's not. Ramey, do you have any good? Oh, what do we got here? My bad. If he hits 30 home runs, he would be the first Giant to do so since Barry Bonds. Yeah, I don't see that. What did he hit? 36 last year? 35?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Mid to high 30s.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Thursday show. We're doing catchers, right?
Hell yeah. Yep. We're talking about backstops.
Yep. We got our preliminary rankings up there. We got one of the W. Contreras's on the screen there. This one's William. There's some others like you referenced before. But just showing you some early rankings on that. They are on the website already, stonedonsportspodcast.com. But that will be the focus of our show on Thursday, the 15th.
I was poking around on DraftKings Sportsbook today because at times I can be a degenerate gambler. And I was kind of looking at some of the Super Bowl futures for next year. Ah.
I like the Lions. What do you think? Plus 1200. That's not bad. Yep. I think I'll do that today. Now,
I was surprised the 49ers are.
Yeah.
Yep.
Favorites plus at 550. Plus 550. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. A lot of changes going on there. Well, with the coaches, and then we'll see what rosters are going to be looking like here this summer. And I'm already ready for football again. Shit. So excited. It was probably a lot to do with the fact that the Lions went all the way to the NFC Championship game, and I didn't get that, you know, just awesome feeling like I normally do. You know, I didn't have a dog in the fight on Sunday's game. I was betting as the Chiefs were going to win, but yeah. Kyle likes the Lions.
Yeah. It's not a bad bet at plus 1200. And usually I don't want to throw in futures bets now. Like, I know you can bet on like MVP and shit like that, but you're essentially tying up a portion of your bankroll for a year.
Yeah.
I would much rather have access to those funds so I can lose them and then redeposit.
Right. Ramey, the Colts are plus 4,500. So, you know,
you never know.
Don't be letting me make fun. Nah. AR, I guarantee AR will miss at least three games this year just because of the way he plays and his ability to get easily injured, mostly his style of play.
Yeah, he's a big dude. He takes a beating. You know, it is what it is. It was almost in a way like he got a little bit of the best of both worlds. He got to sit and watch and see the game while also getting a little bit of playing time experience. They're going to give the reins to him. I imagine the Colts are going to try and bring in another wide receiver and also retain Michael Pittman. I don't think they'll go spend a lot on that, but we'll see. Ramey thinks, yeah, comeback player of the year, AR. It's possible.
Sure is. Guy's talented. For sure. Dubo asks, his cousin's going to be in purple next year. I don't know.
That's a very good question. I imagine they're going to want to keep him, but at the same time, you've got a couple teams out there, and one that I'm thinking of specifically in the Atlanta Falcons, who seem like they're just a quarterback away.
Yeah, agreed. Wholeheartedly. I think the Falcons would be a good match, but I think Kirk Cousins got some loyalty built up there in Minnesota as well. I think he likes it there. I think he'll try and do what he can do to stay there.
Oh, for sure. It's a nice place.
Oh, yeah.
Ramey asks,
where's Justin's where's Justin Fields going if he goes somewhere? The Raiders?
Falcons? Raiders are a possibility. Yeah. Falcons are a chance. I know dickhead owner of the Steelers come out today and said they're probably not going to make any splashy moves at QB, but I can tell you I would certainly rather have Justin Fields than I would Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only quarterback on their roster, really. They released Trubisky, and Rudolph's a free agent. So, guess you're going with Pickett.
Yeah. There's an outside shot of him going to New England. Now, I know they wouldn't part with the number three pick for it, but if you could find a way to acquire Fields and then grab Marvin Harrison Jr., all of a sudden you've got a nice little tandem there to build around. Big thing is you're going to pay Justin Fields soon. And yeah, that is a dude that I do not want to give $45, $50 million a year to.
Yeah. Now, Dubo says they should keep Fields. You say that as an NFC North, you know, fan, or I mean, I'd rather have him keep him. Just, I think it helps the Lions and the other teams in the NFC North out. Honestly, I think Ryan Poles will get fucking ridiculed and barbecued if he does. But I don't know, man.
Well, and you've got, there's no guarantee there's a trade out there for Fields that makes sense for both teams. I mean, if the best offer he gets is like a fourth rounder, no, you're not going to move on for Fields for that.
No.
But that doesn't necessarily preclude you from taking Caleb Williams one overall.
This is true. I don't know. I can't wait. I'm ready for
draft is around the corner.
This off season moves and stuff, but cool. I'm good. If you are.
Yeah.
Supersonic agrees. Yeah. Keep him. Yeah.
That's it.
Spend all your money on him so you can't pay anybody else there. And we got to play him twice a year. So, right. Dubo, that's how you should feel too.
Keep his lousy ass in the Windy City.
Right.
All right, folks. We're going to put a ribbon on today's episode going through third baseman fantasy preview. It was a lot of fun to do. We're going to be back on Thursday talking about catchers. Again, we'll run through 10 or so that we find may be fantasy relevant, and I'm just going to warn you, at the catcher position, that can be quite difficult because there's really only about a dozen that even really warrant your attention, one of whom doesn't even necessarily play catcher a whole hell of a lot. And I'm looking at you, Dalton Varshow, up there in Toronto. But enough about that. We don't want to give it all away. Thanks everybody who stopped by and who's going to check this out after the fact. We really appreciate it. Check us out on the socials, Stoned on Sports Podcast. On Twitter, we are Stoned on Sports One. Dubo, I apologize for not responding on Twitter on Sunday. The chemical enhancements of the day kind of took over and I completely spaced on that. Sounds like you had a decent spread. Hope you enjoyed the game. Take it easy, folks. We'll talk to you Thursday.